When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, Steven, how have you spent your first week without Cleveland Indians baseball?
It's been pretty rough. The temperature in the Cleveland area where I live, and some listeners live, I'm sure, is brutal. It's about 50 and gray and rainy every day. The Indians, when they were still playing, had some beautiful weather. People are getting sunburned. So it's gotten dreary. The same thing happened back in 2016. As soon as they lost, the weather got dreary, so I know you can't relate to that down in Florida, but
no.
You have the more inside grayness than the outside.
Yes. Yes. My sadness inside is uncontrolled and unmatched by the weather outside, which happens to be still sunny, still in the 90s just about every day, as it will be until probably December, at which point it might drop down to the 70s.
Rough.
The beautiful part about Florida is it's below 50 degrees, maybe 3 days out of the year.
So. Yeah, it's below 50 here every day. But as soon as they lost, I don't know about you. That first game, I had the faith, obviously, because it's the first game. We were on our last episode. For those who listened, know that we were almost laughing, being like, "Oh, the Indians versus Verlander and Keuchel. Talk about easy victories." Well, it turns out Justin Verlander has had a resurgence in Houston. Garrett Cole's a star pitcher, and Keuchel, still good.
How wrong we were.
I mean, it was, like, optimistically wrong. There was no, like, analysis to back it up.
It's agonizing, too, because I'm with friends that are fans of the Yankees. Obviously the Yankees are out, too, but, they were alive for a couple more days after the Indians were. And, I felt like we were overly optimistic, maybe, but, what is a fan if not optimistic? I mean,
yeah, we're not going to predict them to lose.
Yeah, it's not like, the Browns or the Colts when I just expect them to lose every game.
Yeah, and then, after that game one, game two comes around, and I don't know, there's just, a sense of dread every single time the Indians were on defense. Because you're like, man, this is too close. They couldn't hit, obviously, we know now.
And I was like, they had the lead in game two for a little bit, and then the lead in game three for a little bit. And
it was 2-1 in the seventh.
They took the lead, yeah. After they took the lead, it's just like, all right, well, maybe we got a chance here. And then, but it's, like you said, every time it seems like the defense went out there, we're like, how long can Carrasco or Clevinger or the bullpen hold this lead? And clearly it wasn't very long because in the seventh inning, the bullpen, did what they did. Did what they've done all year, really.
Yeah, it was just a weird feeling. I can't really compare it to any other Indian series, regular season or postseason, I've ever seen.
But yeah, because, for one, we got swept, and outside of the series against the Yankees in May, the Indians never got swept this year.
And not even swept, just like, it looked like a college team. They, so many strikeouts, just no faith on offense. People are freaking out, oh, they need to fire the coaches. I'm like, there's only so much you could tell Jose Ramirez before he goes to the plate. And if he's just going to flail at pitches and not, be his normal self. But at the same time, those pitchers were on fire for the Astros, so it was just
and they still are. Yeah. Even against Boston, they're still looking really good, although Boston did win last night. That was, I think Ty Van Berkelio, the pitching or the hitting coach, it might have something to do with it. I don't know, because it's been,
they had a good year, though, in the regular season.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I guess you can't even really say that, but this is really exactly what happened to them last year in the postseason after game two. They've
lost six straight postseason games and have barely hit in any of those. And there is some stat that someone tweeted out. If you think of them in elimination games, so they lost one this year. In 2016.
Obviously, they lost game seven.
And, games where they could have won the series, too. Yeah. So last year they lost three. 2016 they lost three.
2007, obviously.
2013 was a one-game playoff elimination game.
Obviously, it's just same old story, and it kind of sucks. Like, you keep thinking eventually, like, you've seen all these curses break, you know, with the Red Sox and the Cubs. Like, when is it going to be our turn?
Yeah, the thing with those teams, though, they're in giant markets. So, like, with the Cubs, they're like, oh, the lovable losers. I'm like, that's, like, the second biggest city in the country, so their ownership group has a little more money.
They obviously have no, like, they're not going to not sell tickets when they're losing to the freaking Cubs. Same thing goes with the Red Sox and the Yankees. They're always going to sell tickets even when they suck.
But to your point,
the Indians don't have that.
It does get worrisome because, I mean, we weren't old enough to be really conscious for the run in the 90s, but this seems pretty similar. But, I mean, you spend all season dominating. 2017, you win 102 games. That was too many. This year, you win 91. That wasn't enough. And then that's the same end result in the postseason. So, like, what is the right recipe during the regular season? It doesn't even matter. It's like...
It seems, yeah, I think Paul Hoynes wrote something on that in one of his Cleveland articles. It's something about, like, how the Indians, like, every time they go into the postseason, you know, they've gone while streaking, they've gone while losing, they've gone while having a wishy-washy season. And sometimes it ends in success, like going to all the way to Game 7 of the World Series. And, you know, sometimes it's just... one and done.
Yeah, and the parallels from the 90s, like in 95, they clinched a division like super early in September, and they went to the World Series and lost. 97, they snuck in, I think with like 80-some wins, went to the World Series and lost. So I'm sure for, you know, fans older than us, millennial Indians fans and above, it's just like you're watching the same horror story over and over. And that's why, I don't know about you, but when they lost... I didn't feel like any like rage or sadness. It was almost like a slow march after you saw the way they opened the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I guess, the best analogy for it. Cause really this year it felt like, I mean, we stayed optimistic on top of it, but really like this year did not feel like some of the other years when they went to the postseason. It didn't feel like 2016.
There was no magic.
It didn't feel like 2017. Yeah. Just the team didn't really have that flair to it. And now you're looking at a team that could potentially look very different next year. I mean, Melky Cabrera, Lonnie Chisenhall, and Michael Brantley, all impending free agents.
I believe Guyer has a team option, too.
It's looking like we could have a completely different outfield in 2019.
Well, you think Brantley probably gone. Leonis Martin claims he could be back, but you can't really...
He's not a free agent until next year, but we don't even know.
No, I meant claims he could be back and be healthy. So he'll be here, but... Like, they're not going to put him out there if his organs are still recovering, because that was very serious. And the end, right field, it's just... Well, we have Zimmer still.
Zimmer,
which we forget about, because he was hurt all year. So it's like...
Yeah, but he's going to miss time, you know, into next year as well.
Naquin may see some action early on, as usual.
Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, now it's Greg Allen's time, I guess.
Probably no Rajay Davis either.
No. I mean... I'm sure that they'll re-sign some of the free agents. Like, I don't think they're going to let every single one of them go. Like, maybe you get Andrew Miller back at a discounted price after his struggles. Maybe Michael Brantley wants to stay, you know.
Yeah, Brantley's staying. I don't know how much he would really make on the open market. Like, I don't think it'd be a crazy amount with his injury history. Like, the Indians really stuck by him. I mean, he was under contract, but...
You know, plus, you got to look at this year's free agent class, too. There's a lot of players that are hitting free agency that could, like... That'll be worth higher prices than Michael Brantley.
Yeah, teams are going to spend their whole budget on a Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. But yeah, with the bullpen too, I was thinking about that during the ALDS. Like, Andrew Miller is not going to get this monster contract. He had his good stretch, and that's when we had him, you know, from Boston to New York to us. But now, I mean, he couldn't even hit his spots in the playoff game. He was throwing sliders behind the batter. And it just looked like he was an average reliever. And I'm sure they'll try to keep him, though, if it's cheap.
And there's even when it comes to relief pitchers, like, there's a lot of them out there that are on the market that may even call for more than Miller did. I mean, Adam Ottavino is one of them. Yuris Familia. Craig Kimbrell is a free agent after this year. I mean,
yeah, their options really are they can either try to retain guys or they can just bring in a lot of new faces. But at the same time, those would have to be cheap faces because of all the money they're paying in raises and arbitration.
And if they want any chance of keeping Frankie Lindor, then they're going to need some of that money.
He is so underpaid, which is part of the pre-arbitration arbitration system in baseball. But this year, I think he's going to get his first big one-year deal. He's not going to be making less than $1 million anymore. And same thing with Trevor Bauer. He's still in arbitration. You just have a lot of guys who are getting a lot of one-year deals.
Well, I wrote about that, too, like in the an article I just recently posted about the Indians having sustained success for the next coming years. And part of that, I think, it plays into the fact that they have most of their rotation under contract until 2021. And that point is when Carrasco, Bauer, and Danny Salazar are all eligible for free agency, which Danny Salazar, we completely forget about, might even be back on the team next year. Who knows?
Yeah. And I was like, I wrote something about Tristan McKenzie, but like you said, this rotation sets. So really the starting pitching, you don't have to worry about. It's just everyone else. And like looking at their contract table and the salaries, you see like Edwin Encarnacion making so much over $20 million. Kipnis is going to make over 14. It's like, man, what, you know, at the time, both of those signings weren't really that crazy, but now you sit there and you're like, we're three straight postseason exits, all pretty painful. Like, what could we have done? But then again, it's not our money, so.
Yeah, I mean, and that's going to be the question next year, too. Like, if things start off a little rough, what could we have done in free agency? I mean, who knows if we're going to sign any outside free agents? I mean, like I said, there are a lot compared to last year's class. I expect free agency to be much louder this year than as quiet as last year's was. So
I was asked this question. I want to ask you this really quick before I forget it. I was asked on a different podcast, what is kind of my general feeling for next regular season? Do you think, well, I'll tell you my answer. My answer was, I think it's going to be, everyone's going to be a little more into it, players included, because we saw what happened this year. Do you think that's the case, or do you think it's going to be another like slow slog, like just waiting for October, especially if the division's bad?
I don't know, because if we remember 2016, obviously, and how that ended, 2017 also didn't start out the greatest. It seems like this is a kind of a formula for the Indians, is they don't always have the greatest start.
And we keep making excuses for them when they do.
Yeah. And then the second half comes around, and all of a sudden it's a completely different team, which is, you know, I mean, you want to play better in the second half. That's what it's for, is for improvement and to try and secure your position into the playoffs. So I'm not going to argue with that formula because it does get us in the playoffs. But, yeah, I'd like to see a little more energy come out of them. I mean, it seemed like Frankie Lindor was the only one that cared about anything in the playoffs. No one else was really shooting out there, like shooting for the stars.
That's why it was weird, because that's his personality. But, yeah, every time he got a hit, I mean, he had a home run, he was really getting into it and trying to get everyone fired up. I saw some tweets from Andre Knott, who was down in the dugout, saying Michael Brantley was trying to get guys fired up, but it just seemed like everyone was so beaten down on offense. And then you have a few mistakes on defense or a few bad pitches. You see Corey Kluber look more average than his normal self, and it's like, this is just, this might be it. I don't think it's a, like, I don't think they're mentally weak as a team. It's just when you're, I mean, anyone who's played baseball, if you're getting shut down by a pitcher, it's really tough to go up there and, I mean, think that you're going to hit a home run, even though a lot of the Indians hitters look like they were trying to hit home runs the whole time.
It's over now. I mean, at this point, there's nothing we can do with it. I, for one, I'm sure, like, I've heard this from a lot of fans. I'm rooting for the Brewers now at this point. I think our buddy over there, David Gasper at Reviewing the Brew, deserves himself a World Series if we don't. Because honestly, no one wants to see the Astros or Red Sox or Dodgers.
I was thinking that this weekend, because I caught myself watching the game one of that NLCS and then watching the post game. And I was like, I think I've finally cracked, and I will at least watch the NLCS and root for the Brewers. I still have a hard time watching the ALCS. Same thing last year. I just, like, I know the scores, but it's, there's such a lack of rooting interest for me to watch that for like 4 hours.
Which is disappointing too, because I love watching other baseball games that the Indians aren't in during the regular season. But yeah, once the postseason comes around, then I have really no vested interest in watching. Last year, I think I missed even like 3 games of the World Series because I was so upset.
Yeah, me too. I had it on, and it's, the people were saying like on Twitter and, you know, ESPN and everything, like, this is one of the best World Series. I'm like, well, I'm not watching it, so don't care.
I got football and football and hockey. We're on to the next.
But for our football teams, I'm a Browns fan. You're a Colts fan. Sunday was miserable.
Yeah, it's easier to accept that you suck and makes watching it that much easier because you're like, well, I don't expect to win, so whatever True. Happens, happens. And I've gotten to that point now with the Colts. Lightning, on the other hand, looking pretty good so far. So I'm excited for hockey season. But on the topic of baseball, if looking forward now into the offseason, are there any free agents that you would like to see the Indians really pursue?
Maybe. See, I was also asked this question, and I haven't thought about it because I don't know what their available salary is going to be. So I'm looking at, I think Jordan Bastian said, like, they might have, like, $33 million in arbitration and $17 million via raises coming. But, so at that point, you have all these guys. I mean, this is the team that they built with all these multi-year contracts. So, I mean, you have Kipnis eating up almost $15 million at second base. I haven't even considered anyone they could sign.
I mean, and looking over it, you're not going to, like, they're not going to get any infielders. There's no reason for them to pursue an infielder. It's going to be outfielders. And when you look at the outfielders, the available free agents, I mean, the big names are obviously Bryce Harper, McCutcheon, A.J. Pollock, Marwin Gonzalez, and then Michael Brantley. Those are really your big outfielder names. There's a couple, like, cheaper, older options that'll be out there, but
I just don't want another Melky Cabrera, Brandon Guyer platoon.
Yeah, no. If we're realistically looking at outfielders for the Indians to pursue in the offseason, they might as well re-sign Michael Brantley because there's really no one else out there. He actually has the on the subject. He actually has the tie for the highest WAR among free agent outfielders. So, I mean, if there's one guy you're going to go after, you might as well go with the guy that you know.
And if you have him in left, Zimmer in center, if he can stay healthy for once, that kind of gives you, you know, you some options in right. You don't have to, since center field's going to be cheap, you don't have to go after the Melky Cabreras. You can maybe take a younger talent, pay him a little extra, and a multi-year deal.
I think right field is the big place to look. Jason Hayward is a right fielder that's available, and he's relatively young. I think he's 29, so he's one that I could like to see the Indians pursue. But then again, like you said, it's, you know, it's all about the salary, and we don't really know what salary they have, nor will we find out anytime soon. So, I mean,
it's really going to come down to the arbitration cases with the raises they're going to get. Bauer's going to get a humongous raise after this season. So is Lindor. Like, they've been essentially saving tens of millions of dollars on Lindor since he's not on a big extension with his arbitration years. So,
yeah, I mean, and now I'm pulling up the arbitration cases that we have here now. I mean, Trevor Bauer is one of them. Leonis Martin is actually eligible for arbitration, but, you know, it's possible he could be a free agent as well.
Brandon Barnes is another guy who's arbitration eligible, who could be someone who gets some playing time next year.
Nick Goody and Cody Anderson.
Haven't seen Cody Anderson in 2 years.
Yeah, and then Nick Goody obviously was hurt for the final quarter of this year. So that'll be interesting to see how it affects their value. And then, I mean, yeah, those are some big names that you have on there. And then we can't forget, like, Mike Napoli's still on this team.
He is.
Yeah, he's not eligible for free agency, I don't think. Actually, is he eligible?
He's got to be eligible. But, I mean,
they must have signed him for a while.
He might just be on the 2018 table.
Do you think we just retire him at this point? Is it time for...
Who knows? Imagine if he took up some playing time next year over, like, a Yandy Diaz or, like, Bobby Bradley. If any of them got a shot, people's heads would explode.
Yeah, that's some nasty business that we don't need to get into. And then I think Oliver Perez is also a free agent that's coming up. So, I mean, you get Adam Simber and you get
Brad Hand back.
And Adam Simber actually, I think, looked pretty good there in the postseason for his few appearances. Brad Hand struggled a little bit, but, I mean, he's still going to be a big part of the bullpen next year. But you're losing three big arms still with Andrew Miller, Cody Allen, and Oliver Perez. You've got to think that the Indians at least try to re-sign one of them.
I like to lean toward them focusing on Miller. But since Allen's been here his whole career, that would seem like an Indians move. And especially with his comments after the season saying he basically sucked, you don't know if he'll, like, take a hometown discount. An agent wouldn't advise that, but I think baseball's a little different, where at that point in his career, if it's like a difference of $1 million or $2 million, he might just say, you know what, I'm going to stay here, I'm comfortable here.
Yeah, I personally would like to see Cody Allen stick around. I know there's a lot of people out there that wouldn't. A lot of people don't like Cody Allen.
But if you have Brad Hand as your closer, then Cody Allen doesn't have to have that big role.
Yeah. I just think he's the scapegoat, obviously, for everything bad that happens to the Indians, much like
Brian Shaw.
Yeah, I drew a blank on the name there. Thank you.
You blacked him out.
Shaw was right before he left. I blocked him out. I try not to think about that part of my life. That was a dark time.
He didn't even make the Rockies postseason roster this year.
That is, and they paid him a lot.
Hey, good for him.
He made a good amount of money to go there.
He got checks in October for like just an absurd amount of money just to sit in the dugout with a sweatshirt on.
I love that. I mean, I feel bad for the guy. Obviously, like, had a tough year in Colorado. But it's good to know that he didn't just struggle with us.
That's also the toughest park to pitch in. So if you're a reliever and you're trying to boost your value, you probably shouldn't go there.
That was the big offseason narrative and early season narrative. It was like, well, the Indians' bullpen's going to struggle because they don't have Brian Shaw anymore. Well, Brian Shaw didn't do too well. So, and the same thing goes with Carlos Santana. I mean, I love Carlos, but he's
not worth $20 million.
Yeah, it's not like he exactly blew everybody away. I mean, he had a season equivalent to that of Yonder Alonso. So
I think Santana just had a slow start. Alonso had a bad finish.
Yeah. Alonso was, I still think, was a steal. Like, for the price that we got, and it was a great contract. I mean, he's still have him for another year and then a third-year player.
He's making about half of what Kipnis is making, so if you want to compare money, and about a third of Encarnacion.
You got to credit Chernoff for making that deal. Speaking of Chernoff, the news came out yesterday that he will decline to interview for the Mets position after he supposedly emerged as a favorite.
Well, he's a New Jersey guy, I'm pretty sure.
Post. Yeah. And according to the New York Post, he was the favorite to be the president of baseball ops for the Mets, which is a position that Chris Antonetti took after he was the GM for the Indians. He got promoted to there, and that's why how Mike Chernoff became the GM. But Chernoff, turning him down.
That would be, I mean, is he 37 years old? I think I saw a headline.
Yeah, something around.
If you have a cushy job like GM of the Indians and you know your job security is really good, going to New York would be very difficult because, say, he fails there, he gets fired. Yeah. What's he going to do, take another GM job? As soon as you take that promotion.
New York media cheers him up. The New York media will just tear him up at that point. And then you get going again. And, I mean, like, you saw what happened with Mickey Callaway when he was there. It just wasn't a great situation early on.
They expect people to go in there and win a World Series right away. But, meanwhile, they couldn't even manage their roster.
That's doubled with the success of the Yankees, and then the Mets are the counter to that. So, but this is actually the second time that Chernoff has turned down a job because he got offered the GM position for the Padres back in 2014.
See, I would take that job. You live in San Diego.
He turned that one down.
You go to baseball games at 75 degrees every day.
Yeah.
But he's also got a family, too. So, I mean, when you're talking, it's not like it's a player where he's like, I have to take this money. If he's getting paid, and he's getting paid six figures, like probably high six figures. So you're not going to, if you have a family here, like what, that's a dream job if you like baseball.
Yeah. And he's got three younger kids, I think.
He's not going to put him in,
he's got a wife here,
move to Queens and live the New York life as a almost 40-year-old man.
No, three young kids. I personally would not. I don't think I would ever settle down in New York freaking city.
Yeah. That's not a place you go when you're older. It's a place you go young, then move out.
But, and then, I mean, you had the possible reunion if he did go reunite with Mickey Callaway, which we miss him dearly, but
I'm sure Mickey Callaway was advocating for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's still got a lot to work with there in New York. I mean, the Mets still have, a couple big key free agents coming up, but not a cushy job over there in Queens.
I think this shows,
Cleveland is the place
this
to be.
Shows where we're at in terms of how low we feel about the Indians when we're talking about their GM. Like, Mike Chernoff is never mentioned during the season. It's always Chris Antonetti or Terry Francona with roster decisions. And it's like, well, Chernoff stay in. So, and you have people like waving a little flag, like, woohoo.
In my little over a year of writing for Believeland Ball, I don't think I have ever mentioned Mike Chernoff's name one time until today when I was just scrounging for news. I was like, all right, what do we get to talk about? Ooh, something happened. I Googled the Cleveland Indians, and it was something not about us losing the ALDS.
That's the glamorous job of bloggers. A lot of people don't realize. You got to do the dirty work and find the stories that find every story possible, especially in an October when your team's not playing. And it's not like the Indians are rebuilding or something where we're talking about that.
Yeah. find the stories or try to stir up opinions.
Hot takes. That's
another big one that we're taking on. I actually did an article about hot takes yesterday. That was well received, I suppose, because a lot of people were like, well, some of these takes hold some ground. I mean, they're not going to fire Terry Francona. Stop telling the team to fire Terry Francona.
Yeah, I read that, and all those takes, I've seen them all. What was one? Andrew Miller's bad. I feel weird. So you, that type of article is going to get some probably expected feedback. I wrote one about how Josh Donaldson's time here is forgettable because he only played in 16 regular season games and couldn't hit in the playoffs. And I went to the dredges of the Facebook comments, and people were like, well, it was memorable for me. And I'm like, well, that doesn't mean it's memorable for everyone. And then I saw people posting. Someone commented with his slash line. It's like 280, 400, 520. And I'm like, it was in 16 games. The whole point of, like, at least Jay Bruce had big hits during their winning streak, and he had a walk-off at the postseason. Josh Donaldson took up the five spot in the order, and Yandy Diaz could have done better at that spot.
Yeah, that's exactly my comment. Like, Yandy Diaz, with a fairly similar sample size, played just as well, if not better.
And it's not even hindsight. People have been calling for Yandy to be at third base for 2 years. And he comes in his first at-bat in the playoffs and rips a single.
Yeah, I mean, he's not getting, like, the home run power that everyone's been hoping for. I think, what, he got his first home run this year, and that was it?
Yeah, he's a line drive hitter.
Yeah, it's not the home run power everyone's going to hope for, like, from a guy that freaking size, but
if he hits 300, who cares?
He's consistent. Yeah, if he's still drawing walks left and right, and he hits 300, and he's got a couple doubles from line drives off the wall, then I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah, he should have been out there. I think I'm going to write about that soon. I just think it's funny how you can just say, like, yeah, you know, Donaldson, you know, didn't really produce in the playoffs, and the first people, like, defend him like it's their son or something. I'm like, he didn't do that well. I'm sorry that.
Yeah, he wouldn't even hear that long. He's
going to go down, like, him and Jay Bruce are, like, trivia question answers. Same with Coco Crisp coming back in 2016, like Kenny Lofton in 2007. These waiver deals, I'm not saying he's horrible, but he didn't do what he was supposed to do.
Jay Bruce is one I felt a lot better about. I actually liked Jay Bruce a lot.
And he was here for almost two full months.
With his stint in Cleveland, I actually liked a lot more. And then, you know, I still love him trying to succeed over there in the Mets. Sadly, he's just stuck with the Mets. But, yeah, I would also agree with you that Josh Donaldson's climb in Cleveland really wasn't that
great.
Didn't
think it was a hot take.
People don't agree with it? Yeah. People don't agree with it? So what? It's our website.
Yeah, it got a lot of traction. I'm like, that's what happens this time of year. You write something and there's not a lot of Indians pieces up, and then you just put a simple take out and people are ripping it apart. Like,
Just ask Matt and Brandon about it.
Oh, yeah.
From what I recall, they've gotten a lot of hate on some of their posts.
Like, you could say, you know, the Indians, you know, should do this with Francisco Lindor. 50% of people telling you you're dumb, 50% agreeing. You could write lukewarm takes about Terry Francona. That's a big conversation starter. I said he shouldn't be fired, and that was apparently a hot take.
I haven't gone on the Facebook comments yet to see, like, any replies to my articles, but I've actually done some fairly hot topics on some of my articles that I feel like might have received some hate. So I appreciate you going through the Facebook comments to find those for us and keeping me clear of doing that.
It's miserable. It's almost worse than the games themselves.
I mean, the Twitter replies aren't that bad.
We have some good interactions on Twitter.
Yeah, it's just Facebook when they come out in droves. And unfortunately, they are responsible for most of our views, so our page views and reads. So we have to sift through the Facebook comments because the people...
They're fans. It'd be like if radio stations stopped taking calls. Yeah. It's the same thing. Demographic of people. Not to hate on all Facebook commenters, but a lot of the most liked comments that get, like, pushed up are the craziest ones.
We should do this for the sake of, like, showtime. Let's do, starting with the next show, pick top 4 or 5 Facebook comments.
I like that.
That are egregious, and we'll read them on air, and we'll talk about them.
We won't say the names, though, because people attach their full names to crazy comments. I'll never understand that.
Yeah, we don't need to do that, but... And this does not mean to anyone who's listening to go and comment the craziest thing possible just so they get read on air. All right? We want genuine feedback, and we will read it on air very anonymously and very spitefully.
I like that. I think we could wrap it up before we get to before we start pulling up Facebook comments.
That's our tease. That will be our tease. That's our good product placement there. It's a tease for the next show. Facebook comment reading will be our first official segment on the Believe in Ball podcast. It only took us 7 episodes to get a segment.
Yeah. How about that? Yeah. Another task is to leave us a review on iTunes. We have 9 5-star reviews, which is very cool. Some people even left comments, so we appreciate that. That makes us feel good inside and also helps our podcast get discovered by more people. We have a pretty solid listener base so far. Hopefully we can get people through the dreary winter. Well, up here, not in Florida.
We're here to keep you warm. Yeah. We're here to keep you warm. I will shed my Sunshine State wealth upon you. So, yeah, I think that wraps it up.
Yeah, leave a review, tell your friends, play it loudly at work, and we will be back sometime next week. We might have a little different schedule because it's the off season and we're waiting for news just like everyone else, but we will be back next week.
Just wait for it. It'll definitely be on a weekday, on a work day. So if you're on your commute or you're at work listening, then still you can expect it on a regular work day for 30 minutes of your life.
All right. We will see you next week.